It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have mostly cloudy skies. It is 44 degrees. Out at the airport, they indicate they have northwest winds at 10 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly cloudy skies all day today with northwest winds 10 or 15, just a chance of rain during the day. Rain is likely after 4 a.m. tonight and through about 7 a.m. tomorrow, followed by showers, but they are calling for partly sunny skies to begin around 10 a.m. tomorrow with a high near 50. Coming up on the Midday Report, the salmon runs on the Karlik and Iyakulik rivers have faced strict restrictions over the past few years. This year is no different. The Alaska legislature is headed for a special session. And some communities along the lower Yukon River are experiencing flooding. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The Justice Department has formally indicted former Cuban President Raul Castro. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche made the announcement at Miami's Freedom Tower.
Today, we are announcing an indictment charging Raul Castro and several others with conspiracy to kill U.S. nationals.
NPR's Ada Peralta reports the charges stem from Castro's alleged involvement in the downing of two American planes in 1996.
The two planes belonged to a group called Brothers to the Rescue, which used to fly over the Straits of Florida, alerting the Coast Guard of Cuban migrants in trouble. On several occasions, the planes flew into Cuban airspace, dropping anti-government leaflets. In February of 1996, the Cuban Air Force shot down two Cessnas. The U.S. claims then-Defense Minister Raul Castro ordered the shooting. Michael Bustamante studies Cuba at the University of Miami, and he says this is bigger than historical justice. The indictment is part of a broader U.S. move to pressure the Cuban government to change.
It also sets the table ostensibly for the thing that the administration lacked, if they ever did want to escalate to military action, which was a pretext to do so.
In January, the U.S. used the indictment of Nicolas Maduro to remove him from office in Venezuela. Ada Peralta, NPR News, Miami.
President Trump is defending a new nearly $1.8 billion fund designed to help people he says were unfairly targeted by the justice system after the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol building.
The anti-weaponization of people, I mean, people were destroyed. They went to jail. Their families were ruined. They committed suicide.
Now, two police officers who defended the Capitol during the insurrection are suing to stop those payments. NPR's Tom Dreisbach reports the lawsuit argues taxpayers should not be forced to compensate people involved in the attack.
Washington, D.C. police officer Daniel Hodges was repeatedly assaulted by rioters on January 6th. President Trump pardoned the men who attacked him, and now the administration says those rioters and others can apply for payment from a new $1.8 billion fund set up by the Justice Department for people who believe they were victims of weaponized law enforcement. Hodges is suing to stop payouts that he believes are both illegal and dangerous.
If they get this payout, then they'll have significant financial resources, and they have no ethical qualms about it. So what would stop them from carrying out any more violence?
Trump administration officials say they will evaluate claims on a case-by-case basis. Tom Dreisbach, NPR News.
At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 645 points, the Nasdaq up 399. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. The salmon runs on the Karluk and Iyakuluk rivers on the southwest side of Kodiak Island have faced strict restrictions over the past few years, and this year is no different. Subsistence fishing for Chinook in the Karluk River is closed all year, while sport fishing for kings on the Iyakuluk and Karluk rivers is closed until July 25th. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced these closures earlier this year, citing the need to, quote, protect returning king salmon and ensure future fishing opportunities, close quote. The department has also closed the entire west side of the island to Chinook sport fishing again from May 1st to June 30th to protect the returning Karluk Chinook, which numbered less than 100 fish in both 2024 and 2025. Both Karluk and Iyakuluk Chinook have seen record low returns over the past years. Meanwhile, the Karluk sockeye have also failed to meet their escapement goals since 2024. According to this year's forecast from the department, the Karluk sockeye run will likely fail to meet its goal of 200,000 fish again this year. For commercial fishing, the department said in an announcement earlier this month that the Northwest Kodiak District and the inner and outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District are expected to be closed from June 1st to July 5th. According to the release, the inner and outer Iyakuluk sections will likely be closed until July 15th to allow for Chinook to return. If the sockeye run exceeds the upper end of its escapement goal, the release states that the outer Iyakuluk section could be opened early. Last year, fisheries near the Iyakuluk River were initially slated to be closed from June 1st to July 15th, but the outer section opened to sockeye salmon fishing from July 6th through 10th because the sockeye run exceeded its escapement goal. This year's harvest forecast predicts that the Iyakuluk sockeye run should be very strong, with over 1 million fish returning to the river. According to a February advisory announcement from the department, Chinook salmon bag limits continue to be limited to 1 for sport fishing throughout the Gulf of Alaska salt waters until September 15th. The department cited failing returns and also the low Chinook forecasts for this year as reasons for the limit. No exact dates for Kodiak's first commercial salmon fishing openers of the summer have been announced yet, but the first openings typically occur sometime in early June. The Alaska legislature is headed for a special session focused on tax cuts for the Alaska LNG project immediately after lawmakers adjourn on Wednesday. Governor Mike Dunleavy says that's because lawmakers look unlikely to pass a bill that would replace the 2% annual property tax with a tax on gas flowing through the pipeline. Here he is speaking yesterday afternoon at a news conference in Anchorage.
A message has got to be sent to leadership in Juneau that enough of the games, stop playing the games, let's get this thing going, let's employ thousands of people, let's solve our problems. It's about solving problems.
Until Monday night, though, it was game on. Lawmakers and the governor had a deal on the table. The legislature would pass tax relief for the gas pipeline in exchange for the Dunleavy administration allowing a bill restoring pensions for government employees to pass into law. The House spent hours attempting to insert tax relief for the gas project into what, until Monday, had been a three-sentence bill. But the deal fell apart Monday night after lawmakers modified the bill in an effort to allow the North Slope Borough to negotiate its own tax agreement. Representative Robin Nyack-Freer, a Democrat and the only lawmaker from the North Slope, proposed the change.
I have to fight for my district, and I have to fight against... Everyone wants to pull the resources out of there to benefit the rest of Alaska. But you want to take away our property taxing rights.
But that was unacceptable to Dunleavy and pipeline developer Glen Farne, which said it would inject too much uncertainty into the $46 billion project and hurt its ability to get financing. The architect of the pension for gas line tax cuts deal, Anchorage Republican Representative Chuck Kopp, says the change effectively killed the bill.
The Kenai Borough gave up their Title 29 powers on a far expensive LNG export facility to make this work. North Slope Borough has not been willing to do that.
Last-ditch negotiations continued into Monday night, but shortly after 10:30 p.m., Dunleavy's aides delivered a two-page letter saying the governor had vetoed the bill over numerous concerns, including its cost. The head of the Alaska AFL-CIO union leader, Joelle Hall, says it's a missed opportunity.
We could be having more teachers stay. We could have correctional employees. We could also have a generational investment. And it appears to me that both of those things might have gone up in smoke today.
Lawmakers failed by a wide margin on Tuesday afternoon to override Dunleavy's veto of the pension bill. Dunleavy says he does not plan to offer a similar deal in the special session. Some communities along the lower Yukon are flooding as breakup rolls down the river. In the community of Holy Cross, flooding has entered two households. Residents have been evacuated to the local lodge. Dave Walker is the city's water plant operator. He says since early Tuesday, Holy Cross's airstrip has been covered with water and appears unable to be used. He's worried about its structural integrity even when the water recedes.
Probably even if the water go down, and it may be too soft or unsafe for them to land on it for a while. We're in for a kind of long haul.
Due to flooding in the lower side of town, Holy Cross turned off power at the gas station and lift station. The city has also turned off water to the south loop of town following a major leak in the water system. Those residents remained without piped water but are able to haul water from the community's washateria. The rest of town continues to have access to water, electricity, and sewer. Walker says in over 40 years of living in the community, this breakup flooding feels out of the ordinary.
Well, I've seen it come up since I lived here twice, but not as high as it is now.
Downriver, the community of Russian Mission braces for potential flooding. As of Tuesday afternoon, water levels were resting at the riverbank and had not yet entered the community. Agnes Hausler, a Russian Mission city administrator, says the community is on flood watch.
No, can't sleep at night because we don't know if we'll have to evacuate during early hours of the morning.
In Russian Mission, several households preemptively evacuated their homes due to increasing water levels. Hausler says they are staying with friends in the community, and that no homes had been impacted by the water as of Tuesday evening. Firefighters contained a roughly 5-acre wildfire in South Anchorage on Tuesday after fighting it for about 3 hours. Anchorage Fire Department Wildfire Division Chief John Glover says the fire started near the 100th Avenue and C Street intersection at around noon and grew to over 5 acres. He says it burned through dead grass, spruce, and mixed hardwoods.
The cause is currently under investigation, but it appears to be a human-caused fire.
Several fire engines were staged nearby Tuesday afternoon, both from the Anchorage Fire Department and the State Division of Forestry. Glover says crews got the fire contained about 2:45 p.m. It was windy and cloudy in Anchorage on Tuesday, but Glover says spring is the time of year when there's a lot of fuel for fires in the city.
It had an ignition. It burned through all of that grass, spread to about 5 acres pretty quickly. And when it's got anything like 5 to 10 mile an hour winds on it like we had today, it's going to move fast and create some potential.
Glover says residents should be wary while recreating and monitor any warming or cooking fires. Anchorage police say officers shot and killed an armed man in East Anchorage early yesterday morning. Anchorage Police Chief Sean Case says police received a report just after 12 a.m. on Tuesday that a man had fired several shots near Bragaw and Rika Drive. He says officers arrived about 90 seconds later and saw a man sitting down and holding a firearm.
He was on the side of the road when officers arrived, and then when officers started giving commands, that's when he got up and entered into the roadway.
Case says the man did not comply with the officers' orders and started walking toward them. Three officers fired at the man, who Case says did not shoot at the officers. Officers tried to perform life-saving medical care, Case says, but the man was pronounced dead later at a local hospital. Police have not released the man's name. Case says much of the information he was able to share was only preliminary. The police chief says he couldn't share details about whether the man pointed his gun at officers or what indications the officers had as to the man's state of mind at the time of the shooting. This is the fourth police shooting in Anchorage so far in 2026. Case said each of these police shootings involved a person who was armed, which he called a, quote, larger, incredibly frustrating reality, close quote.
I think it's time that we start having broader conversations about gun violence in Anchorage instead of just focusing on some very specific and narrow events.
Case says police will share more details on the Tuesday shooting at a future press conference. Alaska has seen skyrocketing gas prices driven by the war in Iran. But as KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, communities in the western part of the state have been burning last year's fuel and are bracing for their own crisis as they anticipate what could be an even more drastic spike with the arrival of the first barges of the spring.
As the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta emerges from a long winter that strained fuel stores, the arrival of the first barges of the season might typically be cause for celebration, but this year it's cause for anxiety. Suppliers have told customers to expect price increases driven by the war in Iran of at least several dollars per gallon on the millions of gallons of diesel and gasoline that flow into the region annually. In the hub of Bethel, city manager Lori Strickler says she's budgeting for a 30% increase in fuel costs for the city over the next year. She's looking for municipal buildings that can be closed and ways to move employees into shared spaces. It's a difficult process because she still has no idea how much prices will jump, and suppliers have an incentive to keep this information private.
We don't know what it's going to look like, but we do know that once that last barge hits, our costs are locked in.
Strickler says the city will likely receive its first of multiple bulk fuel shipments in June. With the fall freeze-up, Bethel and dozens of communities across the region will be locked into prices and left to deal with the impacts.
Everything's just going to increase, and to what extent, no one that I have talked to knows.
The global oil market and the quotes that fuel suppliers are giving rural Alaska customers are both changing rapidly as the Strait of Hormuz remains effectively shut down. But Western Alaska diesel and gasoline prices that were locked in last year by the key suppliers, Crowley, Vitus, Delta Western, and Top Fuel, have held relatively steady. In Bethel and in nearby villages, that price hovers around $7 or $8 a gallon, and in some coastal communities it tops $10 a gallon. Upriver from Bethel, fuel rates are expected to increase by at least 50% at the three-school Ubiet School District, according to Superintendent Scott Ballard.
I've been talking to Crowley for, you know, well over a month and a half now, and it's ugly.
Ballard says Crowley recently quoted him a price roughly $2.50 more per gallon than last year's bulk fuel order. It would cost the already cash-strapped district an additional $450,000. Ballard says he's waiting to pull the trigger on the order, hoping for even a small decrease in price that could save the district thousands of dollars.
The best thing would have been to anticipate that this war was going to start and order the fuel back in January, February.
At the much larger Lower Kuskokwim School District, Superintendent Andrew Hannibal Anderson says the district is budgeting for an 80% increase in fuel costs for its nearly two dozen village schools. Like the Ubiet School District, Anderson says LKSD still hasn't confirmed the price it will pay or how it might adjust its budget to account for the massive cost. Power utilities are also bracing for a hit. Alaska Village Electric Cooperative President Bill Stamm says the power provider that serves 58 rural communities is anticipating at least a 50% fuel cost increase. Stamm says if families can't afford fuel, it'll strain both household budgets and regional utility capacity.
What does rural Alaska look like in the spring when people haven't been able to afford heating fuel, so they've been running up their electric bill, keeping their house warm, and they get to the springtime and realize, well, now I've got a $10,000 bill for my electric.
Fuel shipped in by barge also has a direct impact on the small air carriers that serve Western Alaska. Ryanair Director of Stations Justin Poleas says the carrier recently instituted its first ever fuel surcharge for cargo flown out of Anchorage to offset a doubling in the price of jet fuel. He says a similar fuel price jump is likely around the corner for the smaller planes that deliver essential mail and freight to dozens of remote communities.
We're preparing ourselves for fuel price across
Western Alaska, all our bush locations, to double in price. There's a real chance we might operate at a loss or break even, depending on what the fuel's going to look like. And it might be like that for a considerable amount of time.
Pelea says what's mostly on his mind are the roughly 80 employees he oversees.
I'm worrying about their being able to heat their homes, fuel their cars, all my village agents in 73 villages fueling up their four-wheeler to meet the plane. It's going to affect every aspect of life in Western Alaska.
The costs for rural families that are already struggling to shore up their communities against severe environmental impacts or actively pursuing relocation could be staggering. According to the Alaska Center for Energy and Power at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, even a $2 a gallon increase in fuel costs would add an average annual financial burden of $2,400 for every Western Alaska resident. In the final days of the legislative session, the state is looking at ways it can help, including increasing the state's bulk fuel revolving loan cap, funding a heating assistance program, and giving millions to schools for energy relief. But in Western Alaska, it may be less about the day the governor signs the budget and more about the day the first barge hits. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Three cruise ships that were set to visit Seward in the last week were rerouted nearly 90 land miles north to Whittier because of ongoing construction at the Seward dock. That's according to a social media post from the Seward Chamber of Commerce. The facility is owned and operated by the Alaska Railroad and was supposed to open last week. Spokesperson Megan Clemens says the opening was delayed because large underwater piles need to be removed. Clemens didn't have a timeline for when the terminal would be fully operational. She says the new dock and terminal, which is part of a nearly $140 million project, is important to both the local community and Alaska's broader tourism industry.
This project has been a big focus of the Alaska Railroad since it became clear that the old dock needed to be replaced. And right now we're focused on getting this facility ready to receive ships so that can continue to serve Seward for decades to come.
The facility has a 30-year agreement with anchor tenant Royal Caribbean Group, which guarantees at least 140,000 passengers annually. Brian Stewart of Florida is on the Ovation of the Seas that will dock in Whittier instead of Seward. He said he was notified about the change the night before they set sail.
It was pretty late in the day that plans had changed and we had to make alternate arrangements. So it was a shock. You know, it's not the end of the world. Everybody can pivot, but it was certainly a shocking way to start the trip.
Stewart still plans to visit Seward this weekend, where he's scheduled to take a wildlife cruise and go dog mushing. He says the last-minute change cost his group of 12 about $500 in added transportation expenses. Seward hosted more than 140,000 cruise ship passengers in 2025, which is about 80,000 fewer than the previous year, according to the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Whittier saw an increase of nearly 25% in passenger volume, or an additional 56,000 people.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
A comfortable home starts with the right heating setup, and many Alaskans are turning to heat pumps. Households from Metlakatla to Kodiak could be eligible for heat pump installation assistance through the Accelerating Clean Energy Savings Program. More information is available at akheatsmart.org. This message is supported by a grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Climate Pollution Reduction Grants. ACES comes to you courtesy of Southeast Conference, Alaska Heat Smart, and the Alaska Municipal League.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 20th day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose at 5:36 this morning. It will set again at 10:37. That will give us 17 hours and 1 minute of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 46 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 69 degrees set in 2002, and our record low was 28, set in 2013. Currently, it is 44 degrees in Kodiak with mostly cloudy skies. Northwest winds at 10 at the airport, where they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly cloudy skies all day and overnight too. Chance of rain throughout the period. And look for rain to be likely starting about 4 a.m. tonight through about 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. But then, albeit with a few chance of showers, partly sunny skies tomorrow starting at about 10, just in time for Crab Fest, which starts at 12 noon tomorrow. Mariners, be aware we have a small craft advisory for tonight and tomorrow from Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, northwest 20 with 6-foot seas today. For tonight, southwest 20 becoming south 30 after midnight with 8-foot seas. And for tomorrow on our east side, south 30, 10-foot seas building to 11 feet Thursday night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight and tomorrow, north 15 becoming south 25 tonight. 3-foot seas building to 5 feet tonight. For tomorrow, south 30 and 7-foot seas. Just outside of the city of Kodiak and Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory for tomorrow. Northwest 15 today, becoming south 20 tonight. 2-foot seas building to 3 feet tonight. For tomorrow in Chiniak Bay, south 25 and 4-foot seas. And it is Crab Fest Eve, and I have a real treat. Someone brought by a poem that she wrote just today for Crab Fest, Nancy Boers. 'Twas the day before Crab Fest, and all through the town, all the creatures were stirring, some with smiles, some with frowns. Some will be working while others have fun. Which group will you be in? We'll know when it's done. Thank you, Nancy Boers, for that cool poem. The Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having a work session today in the Fisheries Research Center Conference Room at 6 p.m. Also tonight, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a regular meeting at the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And tomorrow, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and the packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Please contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Remember, Assembly meetings and Planning and Zoning Commission meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough's YouTube channel, and all Borough offices and facilities will be closed next Monday in observance of Memorial Day. The Airport Advisory Board will be holding a meeting today. That meeting will start at 3:30 p.m. in the City Conference Room. For additional information, call Public Works at 907-486-8060. This meeting is open to the public and will be web-streamed. The link for that and the meeting packet are available online at the City of Kodiak website. KMXT is embarking on a yearbook project. The station is turning 50 in 2026, and so we're making a yearbook to celebrate. Submit a photo and help us tell the story of KMXT through the people who have brought it to life over the years. Whether you've been here for decades or just became a member, you belong in the yearbook. KMXT members, please send us landscape photos of you and your family, include everyone's names. You can submit your photos at kmxt.org/yearbook. Please submit your submissions before June 30th. Also, we are accepting photo submissions for the 2027 Kodiak Moments calendar. Photos are limited to 3 per person. Photos must be landscape and without watermarks. Submit your top 3 Kodiak photos at kmxt.org/Kodiak Moments 2027. And again, try to get those in by June 30th. The Kodiak Island Borough School District is announcing free summer meals. No cost, no sign-up, just show up. This summer, all kids and teens 18 and under can enjoy free, healthy, eat-on-site meals at the Kodiak High School Commons. That's Monday through Friday, June 2nd through August 14th at the Kodiak High School. Breakfast is from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Lunch is from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. They will be closed on the 4th of July. If you have any questions, call them at 907-486-7448. But again, beginning June 2nd, Kodiak High School Commons, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. for breakfast, 11:30 to 1 p.m. for lunch. And it's Crab Fest coming up. That means the Crab Fest Blood Drive will be going on from the 21st through the 25th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the Kodiak Marketplace. Remember, one pint of blood can save three lives. Be sure to hydrate and eat before you donate, and you can make an appointment to make everything smoother. Call Terra Cup at 907-942-7117. Also, the annual Crab Fest book sale at the Kodiak Public Library is going on Friday and Saturday, 10 to 4 on Friday, 10 to 4 on Saturday, too, at the historic barn next to the Kodiak Public Library. $5 a bag. You cannot beat that. Remember, today is the Teen Dungeons and Dragons Club at the Kodiak Library. That happens at 3 p.m. and it's open to middle school and high school ages.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.